next meeting.
So, hello everyone. Thank you for coming. This is a meeting about Willapa Bay salmon management. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about hatchery production and possible changes for the future and what all you would like to see from our hatchery production here in Willapa Bay. So, my name is Chad Herring. I am the South Coast Policy Analyst, so our policy lead. I manage commercial and recreational fisheries from the Queens Basin down to the Bear River. I've also got Barb McClellan here, who is our area biologist. She will be taking notes tonight from all the comments that we receive. We are also also recording the meeting, so we'll have those as well. So just want to thank you all for coming and taking valuable time out of your free time to come down and provide us with some input and feedback on fisheries management here within Willapa Bay. We get paid to be here. You guys don't. So I want to make sure that we move through this in an efficient way. We have a respectful and great conversation. All viewpoints are welcome here. This isn't about right or wrong. This is about what each person would like to see. I'm going to synthesize all these comments and report back to the commission everything that we receive here tonight. So with that, I think I'll go ahead and jump right into it. So the purpose of tonight's meeting is to collect public input on changes to the hatchery production in Willapa Bay. Right now, we're going through a comprehensive review of the Willapa Bay policy, we've got an opportunity here to make some changes for what we see moving forward in the future. The commission is engaged in that, department staff are engaged in that, and tonight is a chance for us to come out. And like I said, I'll provide a little bit of information here, and then it's our chance just to sit back and listen and hear all what you all would like to see from our hatcheries here within Willapa Bay. So my presentation outline for tonight, I'm going to give a little bit of background in terms of history and 2019 planning. There's been a little bit of confusion about how all this transpired for 2019, so I want to make sure that's all clear. We'll talk a little bit about the current status of Chinook egg take within Willapa Bay facilities, what we have on hand. And then we'll talk about future production increases in terms of legislation that came out and provided the agency with some funding geared towards southern resident killer whales, as well as the enhanced fisheries package. So Willapa Bay has a part to play in that, as some hatchery production funds were made available for Willapa Bay. So once I get done with the presentation, I'm going to ask everybody to hold their questions until I get through the presentation. It's really not long. I'm going to go through it fairly quickly, and that'll surprise some of you who know me. And then we'll do a little bit of Q&A. I want to make sure everybody gets their questions heard, and then we'll go right into it with just listen to the public, let you guys get your thoughts on tape and in Barb's notes so we can report them accurately to the commission. So, with that. So, Willapa Bay Salmon Management is guided by the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy. This was a commission policy that was adopted in 2015, followed about a year and a half of intense public meetings and analysis to come up with a plan to move forward. Right now, we are currently going through a comprehensive review of that plan as we have moved out of phase one, which took place in the years 2015 through 2018, and phase two began in 2019 moving forward. So there was an adaptive management clause in that policy that we'd sit back after 2018, take a real robust look at everything that had transpired, understanding some of the data that went in to the analysis and the enhancements that we've made over time to those monitoring programs. We have much more robust data now than we did when we started this process of developing the policy. So the policy provides agency staff with some general guidance and management objectives for salmon management within Willapa Bay. There's 11 kind of general guiding principles that help us just kind of craft fisheries packages. And then there's sections for Chinook, Coho, and Chum with species-specific guidance, more fine-scale management objectives and guidance for each of those species. And for Chinook, it actually spelled out what hatchery production should be for Chinook moving forward. So, the outcome of that looks like this. So, as I mentioned, the Chinook production was in the policy. Coho and Chum were not, are not dictated by the policy, but Chinook production, we received guidance to Chinook at Forks Creek would be reduced from a 3.2 million, where it had been for a number of years, down to 350K to support hatchery reform, which is now also under review. We should have some guidance on that within the next few months, is my understanding. The Nema hatchery was set at 3.3 million and Nacelle hatchery 800,000. So this would have given us a total Chinook release of about 4.5 million bay wide. Okay. For Coho, 300K out of Forks Creek and 1.4 out of the Nacelle hatchery. We do have a normal timed and late timed Coho run, so 200 of the 300 are geared towards that normal time frame, fish that return in late August, September, early October, and 100K of those are late time stock that return late November, December. Similarly, for the Nacelle hatchery, the split in terms of late and normal time there is 1.1 and 300,000. With 1.1 million being normal time stock, earlier time stock, and 300K being late time for a total baywide smolt release of 1.7 million. I do want to note here that we do have significant RSI or stream side incubation boxes for Coho. We give about a million eggs annually out to those RFEGs and other programs to do stream side incubation of Coho. Primarily, that 1 million is all focused on normal time stock. So those fish that, you know, late August, September, October returning. And Chum production in 2015 with the policy was 300K from each facility. And we've had some enhancements to that over time. So that's where we were in 2015 when the policy was ratified. Okay, that, when it was adopted, that's where we were at. That's what we released. Those were our goals for the 2015 brood year. Moving forward into the legislative session for 2016, as an outcome of that legislative session, there was increased a line item in the budget for increased funding for hatchery production and monitoring and evaluation activities specifically geared for Willapa Bay. Specifically for the Nacelle. So, talked about just a second ago how the Nacelle hatchery in 2015 was 800,000 smolt release goal. This took it to 2.5 million. So, not an additional 2.5 million, it went from 800K to 2.5, so an additional 1.7 million smolt release out of the Nacelle hatchery. It also allowed us to have some funding to increase releases of chum. We went to 500K at each of the facilities from 300K. So there's been a lot of moving pieces here over time. There won't be a test or a quiz on this later. I'm not expecting you to understand, you know, cue in on every number. The point here is there's been a lot of changes to hatchery production from a year to year perspective. So, and that's important as we move forward. So, want to talk a little bit about survival from our hatchery facilities. We look at a metric called the smolt to adult return rate, or SAR, as we call it. It's a coated wire tag based analysis. So we put the little wires in the fish's head, and those fish are recovered all the way from Alaska and Canada fisheries to our marine areas 1 through 4, Oregon, California, all samples for coated wire tags. We now sample for coated wire tags in our commercial monitoring program. We'd always done that. But the recreational monitoring in the marine area, we have a robust program now where we're collecting those coated wire tags as well. So the recoveries are from all areas, fisheries pre-terminal and terminal, right? So we also not only look at the fisheries, we also collect coded wire tags from the hatcheries, and we do that from the spawning grounds as well, in order to get a kind of a comprehensive look at where all these fish are ending up. What fisheries are they being taken in what proportion, and also how many are returning to the hatcheries and how many are returning to the spawning grounds. So the folks who do this are the hatchery evaluation and assessment team out of Olympia. Gary Marston is the gentleman who does this work and provide these numbers to us. So I've got some data here, and I want folks to understand that this is not an apples to apples comparison. This is the information I have, but it's not ideal for what we're trying to do. We'll have some better information move forward, and that's kind of explained by this, the number of brood years. So from Forks Creek, we've had tags going out consecutively in every brood year from 2003 to 2011. They've continued to go out. The problem is we can only encompass full brood years in the analyses. So 2011 brood year fish, we do have some 7-year-olds that could return. So this would take us all the way up through the 2018 fishery season, right? Recoveries of this group. We can't add 2012 brood years to this analysis till we get through the 2019 season, because there may be a 7-year-old that gets harvested somewhere, and that would have a big effect. That could have an effect on the rate. So we only use complete brood years in the analysis.
So these aren't returned to the hatchery rates?
This is a smolt to adult return rate. So you release a fish and it gets counted, picked up, harvested somewhere.
Okay.
This, it's a survival to an adult. It made it to being an adult and was harvested somewhere.
It either came back or it got caught.
It either came back or it got caught. Absolutely. That's a great analogy, Ross. So Forks Creek, we've got a really robust data set. We've been releasing tags there, tagged fish for a number of years. We've got pretty good data, pretty confident in that number right there. NEMA is the one that's been kind of problematic, just in terms of this type of analysis, because we only released tags from 2003 to 2006. Okay, there hasn't been a tag group released out of NEMA between 2006 and 2015. In 2015, we made some changes to the coded wire tag program, so we have representative coded wire tags coming out of each of the three facilities for Chinook. So this information will get better as we move forward and continue to collect that information. But as for what we have right now, this is the tool that we have. Interesting, when I look at NEMA for just these years and look at Forks Creek for just these years and Nacelle for just these years, this still obviously is about a 28% survival rate. Forks Creek is in the low 30s, and so is Nacelle in that type of analysis. So statistically different survival, but not as great as what this would show. The point here is we have incomplete information in terms of getting to answers to some of these questions. Those monitoring programs are in place. I see you, Marlisa. Those monitoring programs are in place. We will get better information as we move forward, but this is all we have right now in order to assess that sort of survival rates from the hatcheries. For Nacelle, similar to Forest Creek, it's had a longer-term CWT program, but 2007 and 2008, there was no tags coming out of there. So, like I said, this has all been reconfigured, and from 2015 forward, we'll have better information in order to evaluate this, but this is the data that we have at the time to look at. So, Marlisa?
Specifically related to that topic, I said, are you able to calculate the greater wreck exploitation on Chinook in the NEMA because the higher recreational exploitation that happens there based on the CRC data that we have on file? And is that calculated into that lower return rate?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that is, I believe, so Gary looks at the number of fish returning to the CRC program, and then does some expansion to get to what would likely have been, what would likely be and been targeted.
Even though those open wire tags actually aren't actually counted by a rec fish.
Exactly.
It has a way to calculate that.
Yeah, you know, so if you release 1 million fish and you put tags in 500,000, your sample rate is 50%, right? So if you know that so many hatchery fish get harvested, you would estimate based on that sample rate that 50% of them would have had coated wire tags if you would have sampled them. So you can make that sort of, I know that's very simplistic, and Gary will give you a much better thorough answer than I can give you, but that's basically how it works. So just to kind of put a bow on some of that stuff and talk about where we are now, so there were some changes in 2016. I wanted you guys to understand what that meant in terms of the totals, right? For coho, didn't change anything. We were still releasing the same number of coho. Remember before, for 2015, it was 4.5 million. Now, beginning in 2016 brood year, all the way through 2019, it's 6.15 million baywide for Chinook. With that additional production added to nacelle from the legislative action. And then we went from 900K chum release to the 1.5 million with 500 from each facility. Lance.
Did we make those totals every year? I mean, it's one thing to write them up on a board, right?
Yeah, I have a slide later on that will give the actual releases. I don't have them memorized off the top of my head. Some years we do, some years we don't, right? Their objectives, you know, their goals.
Yeah.
So that's what we shoot for. Sometimes survival can be less. You can get, you know, disease issues in the hatchery. So we've talked pretty extensively in the advisory group. NEMA Hatchery has got some issues. It's got some issues from an infrastructure standpoint. It's got some issues in terms of water flow. Typically, we do not make egg take from the NEMA facility in any year. If you look at this graph, basically these blue lines are, the black line is our production objective for that given year. The blue line represents, like in this year, all those eggs came from NEMA. So in this year, we were able to get our total 3.3 million, or 3 million of that in 2013, released all from NEMA facility. These red bars represent production that had to come from Forks Creek, except for the year of 2011, when only 500K of these were moved from nacelle. The rest of the years, all the red bars represent production that was moved from Forks Creek down to the NEMA facility in order to try and meet its objective. Now, what I don't want to say is that wasn't done. Those were over and above the objectives at Forest Creek. So we didn't rob from Forest Creek and come up short there in order to move this production. It's just, as that earlier slide would suggest, Forks has a little bit better survival than NEMA does and a little bit better return rate. So it allows us the opportunity to use it as a backfill for other facilities that have been not performing as well. So, and as you can see back, all the way back to 1990, that's happened pretty regularly for the NEMA facility. And that's a variety of different reasons. As I mentioned, one year it may be infrastructure, the next year it's water flow, another year it could be pre-spawn mortality, disease issues. There's a variety of different reasons why this happens. It's pretty difficult to key on to just one. Each year can be different.
How come 18?
What's that?
How come 18?
This data was pulled from ARMIS, and so that data hasn't been inputted yet. It's, once again, there's kind of a misconception that, like, Barb and I are the housers of all this data and collect all this stuff, right? Those hatcheries They fill out their paperwork. It goes into Olympia. It gets entered into what's called the Regional MARC Information System, the ARMIS database. And that's where we pull all our coded wire tag, hatchery releases, all that sort of information is housed in that North Pacific database. Marlisa.
I would like to point out to everyone in the room that this chart is a terribly misrepresentative because in 2015, we had more fish than we could deal with. Okay, so I happen to know for a fact that we had 5,000 fish in the river that probably just left them to die. It wasn't because we didn't have enough fish in 2015 or many of the other years where we backfilled from other hatcheries, because you chose to backfill from Forks Creek or Nacelle because they were easier to access, not because we didn't have the fish there. And please, when you make these statements and people are listening, it sounds like we die because of disease. And that's not true. Only the last 2 years have we been having a problem.
Yeah.
Only the last 2 years have we been having significant problems with disease, especially ick in the Nima. So please add that to your commentary, because otherwise it's deflective and it doesn't represent the entire truth.
As I mentioned, there is a variety of different reasons why Nima facility, why the outcome looks like this. You're exactly right. Not in every year did we not get the fish back. As you'll see, just like in this year, we got the fish back. They just didn't stay alive till we got to spawning. There's a multitude of different reasons for that. I'm not trying to say that it's just one or the other. There's a variety of issues that happen in any given year can be different than the year before it. But you are exactly right, Marlisa. In some years, we receive enough fish back to the hatchery to be able to make egg take. They don't. We can't keep them alive to spawning.
But do you work out this year?
What's that?
How did it work out this year?
I will show you. In just a minute, we'll get farther into that.
But in that, have you ever had the fish, had them alive, had them ready to spawn, and said, no, we're not going to spawn them. We're going to take fish from another hatchery. Do you always spawn a fish if he's there alive? Or do you?
I can't speak to hatchery practices before 2012 since I was been here, so I can't validate or invalidate what she's saying. What I do know is that has not been the case since I've been here. We have never purposely chosen to surplus fish that were available to be spawned for egg take. Now what happened before I was in this region, I can't speak to.
Okay.
I can't speak to. I'm not aware of any, anyways.
You were here in 2015, so elaborate on that year.
2015 was an ick year, also a very low water year. We didn't fill up the adult pond until after October 15th. We had a lot of fish that were just holding in the river and expired because we didn't have the water flow necessary to fill up the adult pond to bring them into the hatchery or even to fire up the attraction channel. There was no water in the system.
After 2015, we started to go into the river to pull them out.
Yes.
Isn't that insane? And we were much more successful. That had not been used. Those techniques hadn't been used for years.
Absolutely.
So it's not that those fish died of ick in the quantities that we saw in 2018 and some in 2019.
Yeah. As I said, it's different in every year. But, I got to remember the ick year. There was a big ick year for the Nima, but it's not something we see every year. It depends on environmental conditions, really, is what fuels those ick outbreaks. You know, when you get low water and the bright water temperatures and you combine that with the density of fish, that's a recipe for ick. Ick is a naturally occurring parasite we have in Willapa Bay that attacks it attacks the gill plates and suffocates fish. So I would like to kind of... So want to talk just briefly about the age composition of Chinook in Willow Bay. So this is data that we have collected through all our monitoring programs, commercial, recreational, hatcheries, spawning grounds, and it's not broken out by wild or hatchery. We don't see any real giant differences between age composition, wild and hatchery. There's small fluctuations, but not statistically significant. So this is aggregated for all Chinook across all the places we encounter them. You can see the 2-year-old component makes up about 2% of what comes back. The three-year-old component, just 28% of returns. The four-year-old component is really where the majority of Chinook come back to the Willamette Bay Chinook. And 5% or 16% come back as five-year-olds. I know I said earlier there's 6- and 7-year-olds. I didn't add them to this because the proportion is so small. When you add these values up, you get 99.3%. So 0.7% of the fish come back as 6- and 7-year-olds. I think it's about 0.05 6-year-olds, and the 7-year-old is like once every 5 years or something. So it is a number, but it's not worth showing in a chart like this just because we wouldn't be able to see it.
Where do you get this stage stuff from?
Scale analysis.
So how long will it take you to read? I'm assuming like when Barb comes down and does our fish, mm-hmm. that's what you're taking at. How long does it take to get that evaluation?
I'll let Barb speak to that.
Usually everything for at least for the monitoring programs and most of the spawn and ground survey stuff in terms of Chinook is we turn that into Olympia at least by the end of the year, if not sooner. You got to figure everyone around the state is doing the same thing, so the sooner we get them in, the sooner we get them back. I use that data for forecasting, so I would like to get them back instead of waiting until the very last minute. So we tend to get them out early December, mid-December.
Okay.
But it does take them a little while to get them back.
Okay.
Yeah, and that data is critical to our forecasting. So that's why she mentioned everybody from the state is rushing to do their forecast and get their forecast done by February. So it's a pretty quick turnaround. So, but yeah, that's age data from everything we collect, both wild and hatchery fish, for Chinook across.
When you're spawning and everything, you take.
That's yeah, spawning.
You take scales.
Yep,
spawning.
We take scales at the hatchery when we're spawning. Okay. We take scales on the spawning grounds when we encounter carcasses. Our commercial sampling program takes scales at the fish house as well. Were we taking? I don't think we weren't taking scales from the wreck creel.
We were if we had a natural fish.
We were if we had a natural fish, yeah. So, and the reason that's important, and Lance, to go back to your question, what I have here is the actual release information from each of the three facilities, and then kind of color-coded for the year that they would return based on those age class. So remember, 54% of the fish return as four-year-olds. The rest are pretty much threes and fives with a small bit of twos and very little sixes and sevens. So not trying to, confuse you guys with a bunch of numbers here. There are a lot of numbers here, but I just want you to realize the take-home from this slide is when we look at Forks Creek, 2014 was the last brood year that we had the 3.2 million smolts released. Those four-year-olds came back in 18 there, and the five-year-olds are what returned. So only that, 16% is what we had on the previous slide, something like that. So that was all that was returning. The four-year-old age class from Forest Creek was off that 380,000, and the three-year-old, and so that would be represented right here, this 2019 fishery year. For Nacelle, we've also had some significant changes. So 2015 was the last brood year where the goal was 800K. We actually released 788,000, right? And those four-year-olds were returning this year, right, 2019. And in 2016, we released just shy of 2.5 million. Next year, we'll have those four-year-old age class return. So we're trying, basically the point of this slide is, we're trying to make 2.5 million fish off of 800K that were released. Similarly, we reduced production at Forks Creek, right? But we still have returns from that big number for it this last year. And this is the last year where we'll expect a decent, a good size return because of the 3.2 million release down to 300K. And NEMA's been pretty static at 3.3 this whole time. So the returns that we're getting are off releases of that in that 3.3 million range. Does anybody need any clarification on that? Feel free if you need to answer a question.
I think it's important to remember, though, that you're making that 3.3, and we go back to the old slide at NEMA, because Forks Creek was giving you those fish.
Exactly.
And now we're not going to have, for 4 years at least, Forks Creek giving us those fish.
It's likely to realize the reduction, and we'll get into the actual leg take and where we're sitting in just a minute. But that's the whole point of this slide. Is this year provides us an opportunity because we still are. I got one age class of that higher release number returning to Forks Creek. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the current status of Chinook hatchery group stock. So keep in mind, 2019 planning, right, 6.5 million was our objective. Okay, going into the 2019 season, we were planning on releasing 6.15 fish from the bay in total. Okay, so far this year, we've got 2,600 adults back to Forks Creek, 4,281 to NEMA, 2,692 to Nacelle, for a total of 9,572 fish. Now, when we go through that preseason planning process, we have an expectation, once we plan out the fisheries and we plug in the forecast of what we're going to get for escapement, both to the gravel and to the hatcheries for hatchery origin fish. Our predicted escapement based on the fishery package that we had, that we ended 2019 with, and what we fished on, was 16,000 and some change hatchery fish escaping the fisheries. Okay? So right now, we've got 10,000 of those in the hatchery, and if you look at the past 2014 through 2018, the number of hatchery origin fish that returned to the spawning grounds, that number is about 5,500. So we're pretty close to what we expected that we would get, given the run size and given the fisheries that we prosecuted. It looks like, at least in terms of hatchery return, that number's jiving up. As long as we get those, you know, get a number of 5,000 or 6,000 on the spawning grounds. Now, if the number comes back 1,000 from the spawning grounds, once we have that estimate, then I would say we undershot. But based on what we've seen to date at the hatchery and what the recent year average of hatchery origin fish on the spawning grounds are, we're pretty close to what we predicted. So, and for you advisors, you all have those in your models from fisheries planning from this year with that number.
Thanks. One thing I would like to see, and we've talked about it before, is when we go down to mortalities and we put in female mortality, and I understand that, you know, why you do that and not knowing if it spawned or not or whatever, but I would like to see an overall mortality, because that number is going to add to that 9,500. I mean, where do you estimate we are on total mortalities, not just female mortality? Because our return rate is so much, you know, you look at that and you think, oh, we had 800 mortalities.
Yeah.
We must have had, females, we must have had 1,600 mortality.
Yeah.
But I think it's, realistically, it's probably much more.
Oh, yeah. Overall mortalities, that's a much higher number. And I believe, I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I know for sure at NEMA, we've had, in most cases, we've had more male mortalities than we do have females. But just for the point of this slide, I can't make baby fish with males, right? I gotta have.
No, I understand that. But so I'm just saying, when you're talking about a return run, I mean, those are return fish. I mean,
they
came back and they died. So when you're like, oh, 9,500, we're doing good. But if you had 3,000 mortalities, that would make that number 12.5.
No. This is the total return. It includes the mortalities.
But does it include just the females?
Both, yes.
Both mortalities.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just for this slide, I'm just reporting female mortalities and female spawn, because that gets us to eggs, right? Which is the currency that we're talking about tonight. These numbers do include any males that died. It's the total fish Chinook to return to the hatchery rack.
That doesn't add up.
It's not supposed to.
You see what I mean?
No, I mean,
you put total adults. I guess that's what you're saying. Total adults is mortality. Okay, that adds up.
Total adults. So this is the number of fish that returned Chinook, that returned to the hatchery.
Gotcha.
Period.
Period.
That's it. Those are the return. Those are the adults that returned. Of those, we were able to spawn this many females and a corresponding number of males. We had female mortalities up to 793. 21 at Forks Creek, 612 at Nema, and 160. This number has actually really improved over what it had been in recent years. We've made some adjustments at Nacelle Hatchery that have been pretty effective in terms of treating fish for ick, formalin. We've made some adjustments to the attraction channel and the way we handle and go through fish that have improved that mortality. We've tried to make some of those same improvements at Nema. They've been less successful. We are able to treat there. We are treating with formalin to try and keep some of those fish alive. We've added an aerator this year to try and oxygenate the water as it's coming into the adult pond. We've added cover over the adult pond to try and keep those fish shaded and keep the temperature in that pond down. The issue really is at Nema facility, the way the hatchery works is that water flows right from the adult pond right out to the river, and we have some water some effluent in terms of how much spill we put out into the river we have to manage for. So since the formalin that goes into the adult pond works its way through the adult pond and just goes out to the river, we have some limits on how much effluent could go out into the river. And unfortunately, given the size of the pond and the way the water circulates in there, we're not really able to give a very effective treatment. So that's been part of the problem there at Nema, as well as a bunch of other issues that we kind of addressed earlier. So basically all this adds up to, we got 2.3 million eggs at Forks Creek, we got 1.2 at Nema, we got 2.1 at Nacelle, for a total of just short of 5.6 million. We're about a half million short of what we planned for preseason.
You've got an active count of your spawners, and you're multiplying it times 3,000.
Yeah, I was going to get to that thing.
Okay, so that's not necessarily how many eggs we've got, that's the estimate of how many eggs we've got.
Exactly, yes, thank you for that segueing perfectly right into the next. Tim is right, these are estimates. We're using a fecundity of 3,000 eggs per female. I believe the average fecundity from our hatchery facilities from 2015 through 2018 was about 3,100 and some change in terms of eggs. Per female. So using that 3,000 is a conservative estimate. Once we get through and they count all those eggs and go through marking and stuff, we might have a number that's a little bit higher or lower than that. It's an estimate based on recent year averages. I will note that we kind of talked earlier about how a lot of the bigger release of five-year-olds returning to Forks Creek off that 3.2 million. We saw bigger females and more fecund females at Forks Creek than we did at these other facilities, probably just likely due to the higher release, and 28% of 3 million is still higher than 28% of 350,000, right? So it's likely that this number, might be underestimated. We'll have to see when all that counting takes place. And then we can update these numbers. But in terms of what we know right now, this is what we're estimating we have on hand, 5.6. This has gone up a few thousand in the last week. We're still having a couple of Chinook trickle in. It's really very slow and dying off. I wouldn't estimate we're all of a sudden going to get to the 6.15. We're not. So when you think about that 793 fish that died there, that's almost an additional, it's 2.7 million eggs that we weren't able to get to because those fish died of pre-spawn mortality while in the pond. So, that's where we sit right now. Once again, just want to go back to this really quick, refresh everybody. For 2019 preseason planning, these were the objectives that we were shooting for. We were planning for 6.15 release. We scheduled fisheries in order to escape the number of fish needed to meet these targets. Okay? 1.7 million, 6.15, and 1.5 out of for chunk. So that's what was planned. during the preseason planning process, and that was how we approached the fisheries for the 2019 year. Now, to speak about the future for a second. So we've all heard the southern resident killer whale talks, and we've talked through this in the advisory group and in other forums before. So I'm not gonna go into the whole background here, but basically, out of the governor's edict around southern resident killer whales, our response from an agency standpoint in terms of what we're gonna do to help out the plight of our southern resident killer whales. And also, there was an enhanced fisheries package. Those came out of the legislative session for 2019, and the agency was provided not just, and it wasn't money geared specifically for Will-O-the-Bay, it was from a statewide perspective, to increase hatchery production, one, geared toward increasing the prey availability for southern resident killer whales, and then two, a part of that money was meant to enhance fisheries, right? There's been a lot of conversation about not as many fish as there used to be. We need to ramp up hatchery productions. So this is a direct response to that. Now, that was an outcome and funded through the 2019 legislative session, okay? Which, for us, that funding year begins July 1st of 2019. So those funds weren't available until we hit July 1, 2019. Second part of that is, once the agency gets that funding, then folks have to sit down and decide where that funding is going to go and where best to use it. After that was all done, we got notification in terms of regional staff and headquarters staff that from Hatchery Division that we were going to go ahead and look at because of the coastal Chinook scoring in terms of how important they were to southern resident killer whales, that Will-O-the-Bay was a good place. We had capacity, and we had and they were important. Those fish were important to southern resident killer whales to provide some additional production. So we got the go ahead that we would have these funds and be able to utilize them for the 2019 season. Okay, and what the outcome of that, the proposal that was put forth, and I shared that in an advisory group meeting, a Will-O-the-Bay Salmon Advisory Group meeting that we had, I believe, on September 10th, that we were looking at. The proposal was to increase Chinook production by 50K at Forge Creek and increase Chinook production at the Nacelle Hatchery by 2.5 million, bringing it up to 5 million, which would take us to an 8.7 million release bay-wide of Chinook. Additionally, 300K more coho at Forge Creek, bringing that to 600,000, bringing this up from what was 1.7 to 2 million. And then another additional million chunk. We were able to gather the brood stock to release an additional million chunk last year, the 2018 brood year. This funding really just set that program in place so it would be fully funded to move forward. Right? We had a one-time funding that came through because we had the eggs and stuff on hand that we could release an additional million Chinook for the 2018 brood year. Chum. What this does is just sets it in stone that that's our base moving forward.
Not Chinook, chum.
Chum, I'm sorry.
How long does this funding carry?
So this would be part of the base package. This is the proposal at this point in time. So there's been a lot of talk about, hey, we came up so short, we didn't make it. We planned fisheries to meet that lower 6.15 million target. That's what we planned for, and that's what we prosecuted. By the time this funding came through, one, it didn't come through till September. A lot of our Chinook harvest occurs in August. Two, this was a goal that we had money for and we would like to hit in 2019 if we were able to. It wasn't something that we planned for preseason. So I just want to make sure that that distinction is out there. We do have the availability and the funds to do this, but given the timing and given the slide where we talked about earlier, the number of fish returning to the nacelle, off of those smaller brood years for 2019, this was always going to be difficult to hit. I.e., it's hard to make 5 million fish when you only release 800,000, right? That's pretty difficult to do. But what it does say is if we were to move forward with this proposal, then in the next few years when we have returns off of 2.5 million, that's going to look much more doable. Plus, we'll be able to plan our fisheries pre-season in order to hit those targets. So that's been some confusion. I know it's been out there in the newspaper and people have been talking about it. Oh, we're so short. Not necessarily. That's not necessarily quite how that worked out. So I wanted to make sure that was clear as we have this discussion. So that's basically my presentation for tonight. What I want to do now is just quickly answer any questions that any folks may have about the material, and then I'm going to go ahead and take a seat, and we're going to let members of the public who would like to weigh in on this weigh in. Think about this as you're speaking directly to the commission. We're going to, like I said at the beginning of the meeting, it is recorded. Barb will be taking notes. This will all be provided to the commission in their deliberation around what we do moving forward. So that's really what we're here for tonight. I see you, Ross. So, go ahead.
I did a comparative analysis of mortality. I think I sent you a copy. And I'm not sure that we got the right impression from your analysis of Mima versus Mayville. What I remember it said, looking at your number of hatcheries, even numbers historic, but what it said was that we've been in policy for 5 years, right? So 2015, 16, and 17, the mortality at Mayville was much higher than it came.
You're correct.
And
that's absolutely right.
I'm familiar with the improvements you made at Mayville. Dredged out the traction channel, put a trap in, mined that trap regularly, and put the wildlings upstream and let the hatchery ones swim into the hatchery. At the same, 2 years ago, we went the opposite direction in Nemo. Okay, we changed the way we configured the weir during the winter and filled it in the pool right below the weir. Also, debris was left from the first Jippo repair. And then the trap was put in to trap the fish, sort out the wild ones ostensibly, and then the hatchery ones are put above the trap in that little pool and just left there for days or weeks, depending on when they arrive, to get it and be ready to die. And so the mortality flip-flop. Historically, Nema had a lesser one. And so I'd like to tease that out a little bit when you talk about facility problems at Nema. I don't see why there are new facility problems. It has to do with trapping them and not letting them into the hatchery until later, and not letting them do what fish tend to do, and that is that the river is not in good enough shape to receive them, and back down and get a cool deep pool and wait and come back later. They can't do that. It's a check valve, and so that explains the bump in mortality rate. For some reason, we went the opposite direction. And we have tried to convince the department unsuccessfully to not take that approach for the last 2 years. And that's why we have the mortality rate there.
So is there...
We did much better.
I'm not sure I heard a question.
So the question is, are you going to change that, or are you going to keep running it that way?
I'm not changing or running anything anyway. The agency has tried to make improvements in order to increase the survivability of fish at the Nema facility, given what we have available to work with. We have been more successful in turning that around at the Nacelle hatchery. We've had some struggles at the Nema and continue to have them. In terms of the weir, you've got to remember that weir blew out in a flood event. It wasn't intentionally taken out in order to advanced siltation in the hole that was created below below the attraction flow at the NEMA facility. The weir was taken out by flood. It's a very old weir. It's a very old structure. It's been in the ground for 50 plus years, and it's deteriorating. It needs to be completely replaced, quite honestly.
Well, the part that was taken out, hey, is the part that was normally left open all winter anyway, and so that didn't silt it in.
Okay.
What silted it in was pulling all the pickets, which we didn't used to do, and letting the river diffuse bank to bank instead of coming down that side. And that's what our question is. We don't understand why open the whole weir in the winter and not run that flow down there and keep it emptied out.
Okay. You'll have to talk to, we'll have a conversation with hatchery operations. I can only answer part of that. I'm a fishery manager. I have no responsibility for hatchery management or hatchery operations, so I can't speak to that.
Well, that's my analysis of a red
alert. Okay, thank you.
Lance,
sorry.
A couple things. When you look at that budget deal, maybe you could explain how that runs to us. Is that a year-to-year thing on this killer whale?
My understanding of that is these will be our base package, and that would be our funding moving forward in perpetuity. Obviously, the legislature weighs in on that every biennium, and things can change, but as we move forward, that would be part of our base package to support those activities every biennium.
My second question to that was maybe you could explain to people where the Nacelle Hatchery Project is.
Oh, good point. I skipped over that one. So another thing that's important to talk about is another outcome of the 2019 legislative session was that phase one of the total Nacelle Hatchery rebuild was funded. Shovels will be hitting the ground in the spring of 2020. That project is scheduled to be completed by 2023. It is a total redesign. New intake, new hatchery, new incubation, new egg room, new adult ponds, new raceways for fish. It'll give us a brand new state-of-the-art fish separating weir, which will be a concrete seal with a bridge weir that comes across. It'll have an adult holding and sorting for us to be able to more easily take fish into the hatchery and pass wild fish upstream without handling. So that's pretty exciting. So that's also a part of this moving forward is that Nacelle Hatchery will be completely updated and modernized. Just as a side note to that, the NEMA Hatchery is scheduled to have its evaluation in the 21-22 biennium. So that not necessarily doesn't mean a rebuild or it's going to get any more funds for infrastructure or whatnot. That's just the capital assets and management team's assessment, evaluation of that facility will take place in that biennium. That's what it's scheduled for. So,
Marlisa. I have some questions that have arisen regarding mortality in the various rivers and why. And I would like some, I suspect that perhaps things happen that you are unaware of through hatchery management, and I would like confirmation on a couple of things. One, what is the monthly budget given to the Nacelle, NEMA, and Forest Creek Hatchery to operate on? Can you get that information to me in an email? What their monthly budget is? What
you would have to, once again, you need to, I can get it for you. I mean, Randy Aho is the contact. He's the hatchery operations manager for Willapa Bay Facility. We'll take that down and we'll try and get that information for you, though.
The second thing I would like to find out in regard to this, and because it affects everything that we do, and especially since it's a budget-related issue, I was on the understanding that the NEMA Hatchery only had 2 barrels of formula to use in its entirety. And when they ran out, there was no more. And I would like to confirm that. And I'd like to know how many barrels of formula the Nacelle Hatchery used in 2019. And also, I would like to know...
Grass in their purple.
Excuse me?
It's
drive through the park.
Guys, okay, let's not, please.
You explained it last time. You explained
Marlisa, could you please, if you've got a bunch of those, I can't answer that. I have no idea. I don't buy Fuller Millen. I don't store for. I manage fisheries. I have no responsibility.
It's a direct impact on the mortality in the Nima. So my question is, and Ross illuminated it, is that we did not get any type of formalin treatment on our fish until 2019. And prior to 2016, we never had any problems with this type of mortality in that river. And so
that's not correct.
No.
Now, if you talk to the hatchery staff, they will tell you that we've had ick outbreaks for a number of years and pre-spawn mortality. It just hasn't been documented well.
We have not treated our adult fish.
We have not. You're absolutely correct with that. We have not treated before 2019. But if you've got a bunch of questions about hatchery operations, I would ask that you please just send those in an email. We'll try and get them addressed, but that's not the work that we do. That's through hatchery division.
We should remember that all of these affect the successful outcome of our fisheries, and we all benefit with a successful outcome. One thing that we certainly can all agree on here, and this is not a question, is that we all benefit if we're more successful.
Absolutely.
You know, increased production protects us all. Better hatchery infrastructure, you know, is better for all.
Hey, folks, really, I need to stop for a second, okay? I wanted this to be just quick questions to clarify stuff out of the presentation because I'm here tonight to take public input. Okay, if you'd like to make those statements to the commission, we can absolutely record that and you can get that here, but I really want to provide that time to the public. I just want to answer clarifying questions about the presentation. That's all. So if we have that, I would really like to get to the public comment because there's a lot of people here who would, I'm guessing everybody would like to say something to weigh in on this topic, right? So I'm going to go ahead and stop for right now. If we have more time, I'll answer questions at the end of the meeting. But anybody who would like, has some thoughts that they would like the commission to hear on hatchery production and kind of what we presented here tonight, could you please raise your hands?
Why you reduce the amount of fish or the amount from the
port hatchery? Yeah, no, that's a good question. That was an outcome of hatchery reform with the Willapa Bay Forge Creek facility being designated as the primary in terms of its importance to the extinction level risk of Willapa Bay and coastal Chinook. There were too many hatchery fish on the spawning grounds. And without significant infrastructure, a way to remove those hatchery fish prior to them meeting the spawning grounds, our tool to meet some of those hatchery reform metrics was reduction of the production in that facility. So, and hatchery reform is also a commission policy, and it's noted in the Willapa Bay policy that we need to implement hatchery reform in Willapa Bay. So that was an outcome of that policy decision. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and why don't we just start right here. Art, if you would like to say something, I'm going to ask everybody to come up. And because the recording doesn't work well from the back of the room, I just want to make sure that we record your guys' statements accurately and accurately reflect them to the commission. So think of this as your opportunity to speak to the commission about what you would like to see, Art.
You don't necessarily have to sit down. As long as I can hear you.
Yes, dominated by one person in this conversation.
Art Holman, Sports. You got back Forks Creek to the point to where you were supposed to enhance the sports fishery and you destroyed it. There is no reason why Forks Creek can't produce more fish. That's the best hatchery for the fish. And all you've done is increase the commercial fishery and destroyed the sports fishery. Thank you.
Tim, would you like to go next?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, those are the presentations. Please, anybody who didn't sign in, please sign in when you get a chance. If you didn't, I forgot to mention that at the beginning of the meeting.
Sitting up at Forks Creek, you've got a brand new multi-million dollar limo running like a 4-H van. You've got less than a million, about a million releases coming out of the best hatchery we got with the biggest water and the coolest water. And when it comes to the future, this is going to be about egg take. And if you don't restore Forks Creek, Forks Creek will not be in a position where it can backfill in times of the past. We've always known that the warmer water causes us a certain amount of dilemma. In the south, we've gone through, when I came into this room the first time, we had massive die-offs in the Moselle. You have to have your best production facility online cranking the fish out. You've got a, got one ready to go. I don't know how many FTEs they have up at Forks Creek compared to like the NEMA, which is they're relying on for fish. And this is a cluster. And the only way we get out long term for the south and the north is as fast as you possibly can, crank up the production in Forks Creek so it can produce fish for the orcas. Fish, and it's the only place you can fix, you can correct your problem with recreational priority. There's still a recreational priority here on Chinook, and what the department has effectively done is removed the fish from the the area where the recreational has an opportunity. But you got a ways to go before you fix the cell. You got some problems in NEMA, and you got a hatchery sitting there on its hands. And for us to sit there and put that many millions of dollars out and use it on 10 to 12% of its capacity is nuts. It's totally nuts. So my point is, I'd move eggs from Nacelle, I'd move them to Forks Creek, I'd get Forks Creek up and running as fast and as hard as you can, and then when you get that hatchery rebuilt in Nacelle, you'll be there with Forks Creek to be able to backfeed them. It's you put all your eggs in the cell, which has got a problem until you rebuild it. You're putting your all your eggs in a basket that could go down. It could go down on us. And you gotta get Forks Creek back up and running. It's your prime hatchery, prime water, prime place to get it done. Thank you.
I guess I'm next, huh? I'm Bob Lake, and I would like to do away with the primary and contributing hatchery concept, maximize production at Forks Creek at 3.5 million Chinook, Nacelle at 5 million Chinook, NEMA, maximize chum production, and do away with Chinook production, as we will be able to get a better return on overall for the Willapa system by maximizing the production on Chinook at Forks Creek and Nacelle hatcheries, and also utilizing the chum out of NEMA as they are a good forage fish for Chinook as well as coho in the whole bay. It's absolutely imperative that if we're going to do this, we have to have the food for Chinook and coho when they come out. If we don't have the chum, we don't have them. So thank you.
Jason Lake, what I would like to see in the Willapa plan is the Forks Creek Chinook eggs surplus move 60% of them to the Nacelle, keep 40% at Forks Creek, and the NEMA move 60% of the key eggs to the Nacelle, move 40% of the key eggs to Forks Creek. And then in the NEMA, add chum, and you'll immediately wipe out the all the king mortalities that we have every year there. And that would be a win for the marine wreck, create Chinook opportunity, a win for the commercial fleet, a win for enforcement, a win for the state. They save money. The consistent numbers of pre-spawn mortality in Forks Creek is 9 fish. The NEMA's 1,600 to 1,800 a year. Nacelles around 400 to 500, some years 300. The NEMA has a major problem with viruses and parasites, especially for kings because of the low flows and hot water. And that, the NEMA was built in was originally built in 1953. And this is off of the HSRG 2004 deal. And it was done by Pentec Environment. And ever since 1953, they have had a nightmare of getting king salmon back to the NEMA without disease, with water flows. They've changed the way they get water off the hill 13 different times, and they quit doing it in 1998. So it will not hold up. Per the HSRG's recommendations in 2004, it will not hold up this, you know, the king strategy that we got going on. So I say we switched completely to chums in the NEMA when we have water from the rains, and that'll create feed for these kings in the bay and silvers when they're coming back out of the hatcheries from Forks Creek and the Nacelle. That's all I got.
My name's Lance Gray. I guess my first thought is we need to switch this policy from a surplus or a system where we're not trying to manage or make our managers manage from a piece of paper that says priority on it. You have to go and find out how many fish you have to figure out what fisheries you could execute. So far, managing from this piece of paper isn't working. This very piece of paper that we supposedly worked so hard for said reduce fish in the north end of the bay. At the time we did that, most of us believed that was the wrong thing to do. Now we're looking at it and we're saying that was the wrong thing to do. We said this is what was going to happen, and now it's happened. We said the commercial fishery was going to go away, and now it's happened. It's time to get away from this policy. Let the managers manage on the abundant fish instead of on a piece of paper that says this is how it shall run. I think as far as this egg take this year, we have to look at the nacelle that in 3 years from now, 4 years from now, when these fish return, I would be very disappointed with the amount of money that we're spending to rebuild it if it wasn't a better facility than it is now. So I think putting eggs in the nacelle where you're getting a decent return and hoping that the millions of dollars that you're going to shove into it will make it a better facility to keep those fish alive is where you should put those eggs. I look at our policy that says 400,000 in North River, or in the north end of the bay. I don't see where we've changed the weir system there, or anything that we were so desperately worried about getting rid of these hatchery fish as they return, but now all of a sudden we want to put whatever million fish in there, and I'm not against that. I just think it's another thing that this policy, we pick and choose what we want to pull out of it and what we want to do. And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of going to meetings. I'm tired of all this stuff. We need to go back and get rid of this policy, raise fish, let the managers manage on an abundance-based management.
Yeah, Greg McMillan here. I feel the same way. The policy's put us in this situation. The policy has to change. You can't run a fishery with priorities. It doesn't work. You can't be held to certain dates when fisheries are opened and closed. Fish show up when they want to. It's ridiculous. I feel like these hatcheries, you know, should be run at full capacity because, yes, we are losing a lot of production out of the north end of the bay, and that hatchery has supported this bay. That being said, you know, it's I feel like we do not need another hatchery ran just for the sport fishery. It needs to be run as, you know, as a hatchery for everybody. So you can't be held to certain dates when the fish are gone to open it up. It's this policy that's put us in this situation. It's a policy that's got to change. I'm for treating this this whole system, the Willapa system, as a terminal fishery, as what it should be. You know, maximize the production. Everybody benefits. The communities, the fishermen, everybody does. You know, these are, you know, we just, ever since this policies came out, we've learned more and more about our fishery. And I think we know now that where we are with our, with basically our mutt fish is we just raise fish and everybody can enjoy it and do good. And I think you don't have to look far back. I think you can look at 2014 and realize the year before we all had a good fishery. You look at 2015 and, you know, I think a lot of the problems in the NEMA is overcrowding. You know, you've taken the commercial fishery out of there to alleviate a lot of that. And you gave us a very, not a very good tool to, as far as a tangle net, to get some of those fish out of there. We've tried, and, you know, you just need to treat this fishery for what it is, and I think we would all be better off. Thank you.
Go around and start on the end, yep, you, Steve, and then we'll work our way. We'll just kind of sneak through the room here.
Uh-oh.
All right, once again, I apologize for having to pull you all up. It just doesn't do very good recording justice in the back of the room. Sorry.
Steve Gackey, Nacelle Rec. I'd like to see the surplus eggs at the Willapa go to the Nacelle. With the four-year-olds coming back next year, the Nacelle should, without any problem, meet the $5 million that it needs to acquire. If, and only if, the area below the hatchery to the Highway 4 bridge is closed. That was the reason the Nacelle didn't make egg take this year. And that section needs to be closed. The issue of priority needs to go away in the policy, and we need to be raising fish, and we need to be managing for fish production in the future. I would also suggest that the future brood report reflect that the Nacelle be backfilled from the Willapa. Thank you.
Would you like to? Don't feel like you have to. If you don't want to come up and provide your testimony, don't feel like you need to.
If you don't, we're going to string you up and beat you at the end of the night.
That usually happens regardless.
Mark Hermes, live in Nacelle. Support getting ready of the policy that's in effect now and maximizing fish production in Forks Creek and removing they're getting production in Nacelle up to $5 million with a good return coming next year, and increase production of chums in the NEMA. You can release those at 450 to a pound in 4 months, save the state a ton of money. And there you go, more fish. And you need to keep that area that Steve talked about from the hatchery to Highway 4 closed and not open until October 16th. And you can probably, if you want more backing on that, you can probably get all the property owners on that river to sign and say they'll go for the October 16th opening too. Thank you.
Would you like to?
Not
you.
Double dipper.
We'll double dipper.
Yeah, Frank Ornacell, sports fisherman. I've been fishing the river for several years now, and the last few have just been terrible. Nothing much is coming back. So we need to do away with this policy, produce more fish. Produce more fish, and to be enough for everybody. You got to do something about predators. They're terrible. soon as they release fish from the nacelle hatchery, you go down to 101 bridge, and there's cormorants and terns all over seals when they come back. It's just been really bad the last couple, 3 years. I can't believe it. Something's got to be done. Thanks.
Alicia?
My name is Marlisa Williams-Dugan. I am a freshwater fisherman, freshwater advocate, and I am here to give my opinion on what we should do with the surplus eggs that we have in Forks Creek Hatchery. I would like to note for the record that the water temperature is the best in Forks Creek. It is second in the NEMA, and it is the worst in the nacelle. In fact, most of nacelles, a majority of nacelles' coho ends up in NEMA for raising so that they're able to disperse their concentration and keep them alive. And with that in mind, I would like to say that Forks Creek's eggs should probably stay in Forks Creek this year. We need to reorganize how we bump up our production. And certainly with nacelle undergoing construction changes, I think that this year that would be the best decision to make. We need to increase production everywhere. It doesn't mean we need to decrease production anywhere. So I can support an increase in Chinook production, production in nacelle, but I think that we should be backfilling from Forks Creek as we safely raise those numbers there. I would also like to add that until we reach our natural spawning escapement goals, and certainly our projected hatchery escapement goals, I recommend no targeted commercial catch on Willapaw Chinook until after September 15th in the entire bay. And as a footnote, I add this. If and when the ocean commercial fisheries allow enough of our Chinook and Chum over the bar to allow us to have a successful and meaningful recreational fishery and commercial fishery combined, we must stop targeting Chinook commercially in Willapaw. We can fix this. We need to take a step back, and we need to fix this. We cannot harvest on nothing. None of us will fish. Until then, we can grow our salmon, feed the ocean pool, the starving orcas, and the recreational fishers in Willapaw, and I say this seriously and respectfully. Thank you.
Would you like to speak?
Ross Barkhurst, an advisor from NEMA. I'd like to say that I visited the NEMA hatchery 6 times when the icked up fish were in there and needed formalin. Out of 6 times, formalin was going in twice. The trap and the things that I described there and the failure to supply formalin and put it in at the right rate constitute gross negligence. None of the plans made before today and exposed today can comply with Hatchery Science Review Group standards at all, or the standards we say that we're complying with. Okay, there is over half of the sport fishery in the bay has been eliminated, and the plans that are obviously being leaned towards by the department will remove the next best sport fishery in the bay. Obviously, some folks want to eliminate the recreational priority for the one species, Chinook, because you would have to carry out these kind of plans. Chad mentioned an aeration system and the name, I didn't see it.
I'd like to stop this right now. Yeah. This is very disrespectful. These two in the front with their phone going so that Ross's speech is interrupted.
Wasn't your son's phone going off the whole time too?
Hey, guys, let's stop. Let's make sure the phones are on mute. I'm sorry about that, Ross. Go ahead and continue.
I touched the screen. It was an accident. It was an accident.
Okay, let's not.
Sorry about that, Ross.
Thank you. The plans for increased chum production are admirable, but we're doing that by snagging wild fish off their beds, and that's a potential problem. We seem to have a good idea in the department where we want to head, but when you have a question about a hatchery, well, the hatchery guy's been kept away from us for a year, and so you have to ask them questions, and they're not here. They were scheduled for next week. That got canceled. So it tastes, looks, and smells like a biased situation to destroy sport fishing in Willapa Bay, and I hope our county commissioner can understand that and will not support it. I appreciate the fact that she's here every time paying attention. I think that the coated wire tags are going into a lot of fish in Nema now. We didn't hear that. They're going into a lot of fish there now. But I don't think that the data you're going to get is very good. Okay, I've witnessed hundreds of mortality Chinook in a hatchery being pulled out of the pond, put into dumpsters without being scanned to see if they have a coated wire tag. That would produce some bias going forward. So this whole thing seems to be aimed at removing sport fishing as we know it in the Willapa Basin. We used to have a really good sport fishery for coho in the Nema River, and that was stopped. We don't release one coho in there anymore. And now we're talking about, some people are talking about, well, let's not release Chinook either. Now give us a break. Thank you.
My name is Paul Qualey. I live in Buckley over in Pierce County. I've enjoyed fishing the Tokeland sports fishery for years. Since the fish have been pulled out of Forks Creek, the fishery's declined in the last few years. So I'd like to see fish brought back to Forks Creek. That's all I have.
How about you? Do you like to say anything? Commissioner? No, you're good? Any of you gentlemen? No? Okay, I'll come back around over here. Would any of you gentlemen like to come up and speak? Bruce, I know you have your hand raised. It's your turn.
My name's Bruce Ogren, commercial fisherman. Been fishing since 1970 on Willapa Bay. I think the Willapa Bay plan should be dissolved. First deal, when you have PFMC regulating the ocean fisheries and they consider the Willapa Bay stock a hatchery stock, and they're not concerned basically over the number of years of the returning natural spawners, which are hatchery strays. We'll put it in that spot. So when you want to discriminate with the fisheries department between commercial and recreational fishers in Willapa Bay on this outside hatchery program, and then the fisheries department considers the Willapa Bay plan wants to support natural spawners and constrains the release of hatchery fish, constrains the commercial catching of our August fishery, our September fishery, early part, and impacts both commercial and recreational fishing. This is wrong. The Fish Commission should go back and look from 1980 to 1985, when we were releasing sufficient number of Chinook, coho, and chum. in the hatchery system. When the fisheries department, one example, decided to let the chum production go back to wild and cut the Nima and other hatcheries out of chum production, that impacted our coho season on the early part. It impacted the November season on the coho on the late part because of this chum failure that was promoted by the fisheries department when they decided to go with the chum production. I'd like to see the $2 million released at Forks Creek that they took this year, the million plus whatever was at NEMA, at the NEMA, and the nacelle hatchery with its egg take released there, and try to promote the increase of Chinook returning for both recreational and commercial fishermen, and throw out the Willapaw Bay plan as it is stated there, because my personal belief, it was a bias to the Fish Commission and the fish commissioners that forced it upon the commercial and recreational fishermen. Thank you.
Commissioner Olson, would you like to say anything? Nope. Okay, so we got about 35 minutes left. If anybody has any questions or anything else they would like to say, I think we can do that this time. So I see two hands. I saw Lance first, and then you, Steve.
Oh, I thought at the last meeting we had here, we talked about the formalin issue that we're talking about tonight in the hatcheries, and I thought we discussed that there was less at NEMA because the facility was unable to outlet at the same rates as North River and Nacelle. There was. I thought you spoke to that. Yeah. Why? We couldn't release more than what we were. We were releasing as much as we could. I thought you spoke to that last time. Said, yeah, those two facilities had more of it than the NEMA did, but it wasn't because the state ran out of it or the state ran out of money. It was because that was all you could do in that facility because of the way the water structure was. I thought that's what we discussed last time.
That is my understanding. My understanding is we were only able to treat 2 days a week at NEMA to make sure and stay under that effluent discharge. As I spoke to, the outfall from the adult pond goes right into the river. There is settling at nacelle, so it allows us to put more chemical basically into the water. That settles out and doesn't release into the river, so we're able to more effectively treat at nacelle than we have been able to.
So I mean, I guess I just.
But I would have to look in. That's just what my understanding.
Right.
I'm not sure how many formalin barrels were delivered to each facility, and if they ran out, those are answers I can't provide today. As I said, my understanding was we treated it at a rate that kept us within our water quality standards for vis-a-vis our hatchery operations permit.
And you believed it was different for each facility?
Absolutely, yeah. That's my understanding.
You know, or
that's
I guess
my
understanding. Yeah. Okay.
Steve, and then, are you writing these down for me? Okay. Steve?
With this capital improvement project on the nacelle, and it's probably a little bit too late to even bring it up, but with cold water temperature issue there on the nacelle, it would make sense to install overlift chillers and do away with coated wire tags, which have so much air in them, but that chiller could then be used to chill out water in the fall to help fish survival. I know
I'll have to get back to you on that. I know chillers are expensive. I don't believe that a chiller is part of the design plan moving forward. I would have to check on that, but I don't believe so.
But you said state of the art.
Everybody has air conditioning.
Hey, that depends on what state you're in, right? So, who did I have next?
My question would be Forks Creek Hatchery. I just looked at your production here. Are the extra 300,000 coho, are those early or late?
So what we're planning on, the proposal would be to release those in the same proportions as the 300K already. So we talked earlier about how out of that 300K, it's 200 that are normal time, 100K late time. What we would do is go to 400K normal time and 200 late time if that was to...
And how does that affect the Chinook numbers? What's your number now?
Releasing, so there is a carrying capacity at the facility. Releasing additional coho reduces the available space for Chinook. I'm not exactly sure on the exact numbers. I wasn't prepared to speak to that tonight. I would have to check with hatchery staff. But I do know that, for instance, if the outcome was to go to back to 3.2 million at Forks Creek, I do not believe that we would have the space to do the additional 300K coho. I don't know how that works out when you start bringing that level back down. And I only say that number not because it's a thought or a recommendation or that's what's going to happen. Just that's what the hatchery production used to be, just to kind of put that in context.
Is there any other fish there that are causing that besides
steel, coho? Well, there's steelhead that are raised. There's steelhead that are raised and chum that are also raised. But it's different. The steelhead probably has an effect. I wouldn't say that chum has an effect because they're released so quickly after hatching, right? They're once fed fry and go out, as one gentleman pointed out, 450 to the pound.
Right.
Whereas coho are raised for a year. So I don't believe incubation space is a limiter. I believe it's pond space.
Is it?
But that's my...
Are they still putting springers out of there? Are you just
so we did do some plants of springers in the 2018 brood year. There is funding to continue that moving forward. I think that's something we could talk about in this, and I'm sure the commission will weigh in on that as well, because that would have an effect on rearing space. We were not able... the eggs for that spring Chinook program were coming out of the Cowlet system, and it was only if eggs were available out of that system that we would move and release them from Forks Creek. This year, they didn't have any available eggs, so we're not getting any. Otherwise, we would try to do that million spring Chinook release plant again.
So with that extra coho production, you don't have any idea on the Chinook?
I believe we can raise, if we went to 600K coho, I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 2.5 million Chinook out of Forks Creek that we could. But don't hold me to that. I'm pulling that number off a conversation from memory. I would have to check to be absolutely accurate. But it's in that realm.
Thank you.
Klamath is not part of the Cowlet system, and you're getting them from the plants.
I believe so. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. All right, I misspoke. Thank you. I meant to say Klamath. I was dealing with some barbed hooked issue in the Cowlets earlier, so I'm sorry. Thank you. Going in that order.
Can you take your slide back to your...
What happened to me?
It's worth it.
Huh?
Got to be a lot more...
Which slide are you looking for, Tim?
Mean the river, the where you showed the red backfill.
The backfill.
When I go to look at this without reflection on your staff, Aaron's staff.
No, no.
I go to look at this thing and you notice that you reach the stage of the game in 2010, 2011, 2013, 2014. Okay, we're hitting our goal, right?
Yeah.
Now, guess what happened in 2015? You see that? All of a sudden, that huge reliance on that backup, and all those deaths that occurred in the river, and the staff was fully aware they were going to have 6 million extra eggs coming out of their ears in Forks Creek. Isn't that really interesting, how the reliance on getting their own eggs came at a time when they knew they were going to have all the surplus? So I don't think that is a true reflection of what would happen as we've seen a change when the eggs started to wander away, went from 6 million down to 1.2 at Forks Creek, and all of a sudden people were in a wild-ass scramble to grab eggs. They weren't in a wild-ass scramble at that time. That is a problem.
The The one thing that stands out to me from this graph, specifically in the years that you point out, is 2015 was the first year we really saw that rain move back. We didn't get the September rains. Remember, 2015 was also the first year of blob, terrible ocean conditions. We had an emergency drought declaration across the state because of low flows, lack of rainfall, and incredibly high temperatures in the fall. We had huge mortality across all places in 2015. I believe that Nacelle experienced much higher mortality than NEMA did in the 2015 year. To me, that's really, and we've seen these type of scenarios continually replicated, right? 2018 looks a lot similar from a hydrograph and water temperatures perspective as 2015. We saw that replicate itself in 2016. Not so bad in 17, where we got some rain. We got some early rain. We had cooler temperatures in the fall. And we were more successful keeping those fish alive in the NEMA. So in terms of hatchery operations, I can't speak to that. But when I look at that, I see this as a reflection of what's to come.
Right? Did you take 2012 off or what?
No, unfortunately, for some reporting issue, there was no reported release into the database from ARMIS.
Wasn't that
for 2012? Now, obviously, I could get that number. I could just get that number from the hatchery and put it in. What I can't do is replicate the backfilling and the brood source. So we left that off that year. I'm not sure what that would show. It might show that we met it completely. It might add one more year to NEMA where we made it completely. I don't know. And I'm not able to track that now.
So Lance?
The other part of my question,
sorry,
okay, was that you showed this, and I appreciate it. But you didn't bother to show the backfilling in the cell, did you?
No, I do have that data. Nacelle does get backfilled occasionally from Forest Creek, not nearly to this level. I do have that data, and I have that slide. If you would like it, I can provide it to you. We can have Barb send it out.
Please do, because one of the things that I would have done it myself, but I have
Barb. Anybody can pull it from Marcus, yeah.
Oh, no, you can. You can't go to have to escape the reports anymore and show the transfers you should and won't fall back.
No, that's why I use ARMIS, because that data is difficult to come up with.
You don't need a whole lot of backfilling when your production is 800,000.
Okay, one at a time, please.
My point is, it is the escapement. You don't have to go to ARMIS. The escapement, the transfers, are supposed to be the blue stop, and they're supposed to be the escapement reports. They're there everywhere, except for this magical disappearance from the tracking of transfers that occurred in the little pump tonight. Whenever I see something like that, I go, why? Why? I don't know.
Yeah, you'd have to talk to hatchery operations staff. I don't play any part
in next week getting
that data.
Yeah.
No, and I apologize for that. I meant to have Eric Kinney was scheduled to come in and talk to us, who is the statewide hatchery division manager, as well as Gary Marston, who has does the program performance for hatcheries. Eric got called away to go meet with legislators that night, and so we have to reschedule. I'll be working with Eric to finalize the schedule and get a reschedule that meeting very soon.
If we saw that, I think it would make the point I tried to make my phone.
You guys don't want to just hear me give non-answers.
You've got to have a place to backfill, okay? And the place that you would keep your production up is Forest Creek, because it's not as susceptible as the other two hatcheries. So that would have been helpful, because we would have seen that.
Yeah.
Because I would like to see where you guys are getting all the eggs for yourself.
Yeah. Like I said, I do have that data. I can provide that to you if you'd like. Barb, can you make sure and write that down, and we can get that data out to folks? What it would say is we have backfilled from Forest Creek over the last couple of years. We've utilized some. Who is next?
Lance.
Lance, go ahead.
I had a couple of questions. I mean, when you look at that graph, as we pull it up there, obviously we had a number that we ran across that we were trying to reach of 2 million fish. We put on a piece of paper that we were going to ramp that up to 3.3 million, and now we get these large, much larger problems. You know, whether it's climate that we can't control, whatever it is, you know, I don't think we can. And I'm not against raising some fish in the Nema River. I'm very afraid, and I'm going to use your name, Tim. We spoke to this last time about we're getting a return. They're going through all these fisheries, and they're feeding orcas, and that's good enough. You said that last time. But we can't farm that way if we don't have seeds for the next year. And I that's my problem with this is, because we put it on a piece of paper, it's what we must do. And I think that we need to evaluate, instead of saying, I put that on a piece of paper, so that's right. We need to evaluate by what the NEMA was and not what we wanted it to be. And we need to go back, like I said, I'm not against not raising any fish in the NEMA. I'm just saying we have to stop and look at what return should come back that we can get that survive, get the eggs out of it, and not just have it come back and die. Because I know that you're saying it goes through every fishery and it lets everybody prosecute a fishery. But at some point, we have to get to where these hatcheries can self-sustain themselves. That when we originally did this plan, every hatchery was going to run on its own eggs. That's how we started the policy, you remember? Every hatchery was going to only take its own eggs. We don't want any more backfilling from anywhere. That was the big issue. And if we had not backfilled from Forks Creek over the last 5 years, we would be in some serious trouble right now. I mean, you look at where you would be in the NEMA. I mean, our returns would be, and I agree that I agree that the nacelle has had its problems. I'm putting some faith in the state with $20 million. They're going to get it better than it was. Maybe that's a lot of faith. But looking at this slide, that's one of my thoughts. That we have to stop and look at what these rivers should do, not what we want them to do. And in that note, I'm going to piss off a lot more people. I know it's recorded. And it's probably not, since we're kind of an open question, I want to touch on the closure we have right now on our coho fishery. My understanding is you're going to leave open a steelhead fishery and trout or whatever's going on. I like to wreck fish during this time. It's the time of year I wreck fish. But my problem with that is you were going to hook and release way more coho, because I fish with the same stuff, the same gear, the same boat for both species. The first thing in our policy was conservation. Once again, we just extract that word and throw it out because it doesn't work right now to prosecute a steelhead fishery. And I know there's a lot of guys in here that want a steelhead fish. And I'm not saying you shouldn't. What I'm saying is that is the problem with our policy and the way it runs. We should be under conservation, not fishing until either A, we know we have our broodstock for natural coho, or until that run has exhausted itself. Now that means pretty much not having a steelhead fishery. I think if it's January 15th before you go steelhead fishing, I think there'd be a lot of guys that would come after Chad with knives and bats. But somewhere, we put this policy down on a piece of paper, it said, first line, conservation first. And I believe that you're going to hook and release a lot of coho, and you're going to have a lot of mortality, fishing with a bobber and eggs, fishing the way you do, and I do it too. So that's another problem I have with this policy. We're changing how many fish we're raising here. We're taking fish from Kalama and bringing them in. These were all things that this policy said we shall not do. They were God's rules when we started this thing. And now, we cherry pick out this. We cherry pick out that. And I just think, for me, overall, the 11 guiding rules that you put up there earlier, we've changed 9 of them. I mean, that's how I feel about it. And it's like, we still want to hold on to this policy. It's time for us to really evaluate and sit down and look at running this fishery. The amount of time you've put in, the amount of time that these advisors have put in, the amount of time on the commission, we could have raised another 10 million fish a year. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know how many fires I've started with these pieces of paper you've given me, because they change every time we come here. They change. I mean, that's the honest truth. I mean, we shouldn't be putting this kind of time into what we're doing. It's ridiculous. I don't do it anything else in any other fishery but the Willapaw Bay, where we shouldn't have any problems.
Thank you.
Ross.
Thank you. What we've seen here tonight is not enough information for anybody that isn't already having spent 4 or 5 years of their life studying it. Nobody else can really figure out what to do based on what you've shown. You've only shown the performance of one hatchery. You've already put out a piece of paper approved that by the agency, in your words, that says this is the way you're going to go with production. Now you're trying to back it to the public and go through an act to get everybody's input. And this turned into a hatchery production, and naturally it would have. That's what hatcheries have put things in. But we don't have anybody here who can answer questions about the hatcheries. And so for a public meeting, the public is not well enough informed to make an intelligent decision unless they've been in the middle of it all along. And you heard from those of us who've been in the middle of it all along last week on the same subject. The other thing is you've produced a plan for future production that only works with eliminating most sport fishing. And it's not acceptable. That part of the policy, I believe, will survive. However many pickles you can come up with, there's going to be a sport fishery in this bay, and you produced a plan that doesn't allow for one. And so it's unacceptable.
Next.
Bob.
Well, first of all, I'd like to elaborate on that formula question. The problem with the formula was it's controlled, the releases are controlled by ecology and their standards. That's what the difference was, the difference in flow between Nacelle River and the Nema River. That's why there's big discrepancy. Okay? And then also, for verification, so far this year on Chinook, and pod mortality on Chinook at Nema was 1,691 that was counted. And the rest of them, we only had 9 at Forks Creek, but there was 408 at Nacelle. So we need to do something to straighten out Nacelle also. But also, I got to agree with what Lance is saying about if we want to protect the natural spawning coho, we start stealing fishing, we're going to stormmouth an awful lot of coho, period. It needs to be looked at. What, is there anything that can be done with that? Because I know steelhead's a game fish, and that's out of your realm.
Yes.
You know, but I mean, is there anything that can be done? And also, is what's going to happen if somebody is caught fishing silvers right now, since it's closed? What's going to happen to them? Is enforcement, are they going to bust them or what?
I would assume enforcement would be enforcing the regulations that are in place if they see that activity occur. It would be my assumption.
Well, well that's the question I've got, because
what
it's very
still
important.
What if you steal that fish and accidentally catch it?
If you retained it, you would be illegal. If you released it, you released it. They're just not legal to be retained. Steelhead fisheries are, game fish fisheries are open.
Jason?
Yeah.
Did you see him?
I'm going to go back to Greg's.
Hey, Chad, on that, on the base closed for coho, for commercials, and the rivers closed for sports, is it a selective fishery for barbless hooks?
No.
It should be. And you should, none of those sports, I think, should be able to at least retain one hatchery coho. I mean, it's, here we are. You know, you see 3 out of 4 years of no statement, you're going to get it now, so. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway, yes, 3 out of 4. Now the sports are paying for don't know, it seems to me that, yeah, you know, it's good, but anyway. You should, yeah, it should, coho native retention, but leave it one half of your coho for retention and put a selective fishery barbless hooks.
Thank you. Sorry, Rick. Jason, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Yeah, this go back to what Greg was talking about, how much room there was at the hatcheries. Just to remind you guys, we have some mothballed facilities around Willapa Bay that can take coho to raise. All we got to do is put them in there and feed them. You know, like Workless Ponds, youth group, or the youth camp, they got raceways and ponds there. There is net pens at the Port Dock and Raymond that can be put back in. There's net pens in Nakata that can be put back in that will hold all old coho. And then go back to what Lance was just saying. I absolutely refuse to go sport fishing for steelhead right now, which I love to do. I took my pole out of my truck this morning because I'm not going to go to the river and go catch a bunch of coho that we're trying to protect right now. You know, I mean, I can't go gill net them. I can't pay my bills off of my gill netting because we're so concerned about this. I don't think it's right, morally right, to be able to go to a river and sore mouth a bunch of them and have mortalities when we need to get them back. And hopefully, within the next few days, we can get enough fish back up the rivers that you guys can warrant reopening up both the commercial and the sport fishery. I think we're better off shutting everything down until it's the proper time to go back fishing. It's not fair for the one group and the other group to sit, you know, or it's not fair for the fish. We need to get these fish back and then open up another fishery.
Yeah, the wild one.
Thank you. All right. Hey, hold on. We have folks sign up. I'm sorry. Need to.
Okay. I have quite a bit to say. So first, I think that since you're not in charge of hatchery operations, we need to have this meeting that got canceled where we can talk to these individuals about modernizing our facilities with some options that aren't that expensive to do. One is UV light treatment, which I have talked to you about before, about somehow managing to recycle our water in our hatcheries where we don't have enough, and it's likely that all of our hatcheries in the years to come are going to be experiencing some of these low flows as we continue to experience global warming, and we need to be proactive and not reactive to these problems instead of standing back, wringing our hands, and watching the disaster happen. The other thing, let's be clear, that the recreational selective fishery with a barbless hook is not responsible for the decline of our Chinook, the coho, or the chum. And yet, we are the ones that pay the penalty in the end in freshwater and the marine wreck area after we have over-harvested from the ocean in commercially. And it is not fair for the recreational sector to bear this burden. Thank you.
Who's next? Is this last one? Last one? And then we'll go ahead and end the meeting. Yeah. Tim.
I'd like to address what Lance was talking about policies. He's right. There's only two pieces of the policy that we adopted and kept for a short period of time. That was the entry of the dates or the nets going into March. And the 350,000 releases out of Forest Grant. That was it. Now, the policy is a non-binding guidance that is not enforceable, and from that point on, did we manage for conservation first? No. Why? Pardon me, no. Did we manage for hatchery escape control? No. Why? Because it's hard to do it. The difference between blaming the policy, because without the policy, I'm telling you, in some kind of restraints, we would be here today anyway. They were going to kill those fisheries anyway, Lance. They were taking us right down the toilet. Okay, so when you look at the policy, don't get mixed up over the policy and the actions taken by the department. They're two separate different things.
Okay. Thank you for that, Tim. Thank you all for coming, providing your valuable insights. Great discussion tonight. I appreciate you all showing up. And like I said, for you Willow Bay advisors, we will be rescheduling that meeting as soon as we can work out the scheduling, and we'll get that message out to you as soon as possible. Thank you.